You're listening to the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. I'm Heather Vail, and I'm speaking with Keith Brooks, CEO and founder of the National Fellowship for Black and Latino Male Educators Las Vegas Chapter. Keith, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks, Heather. Glad to be here.
So what exactly is the National Fellowship for Black and Latino Male Educators?
Yeah, the National Fellowship for Black and Latino Male Educators is an organization that's really at its high level focusing on ensuring that every student across America, especially in Las Vegas, has a teacher, has a leader, or has someone in their school that looks like them, and particularly our Black and Latino students, and with a specific focus even in that on male students. And so our mission really is just to identify, increase, retain, and sustain the number of Black and Latino males in senior and C-level positions in the education sector in Las Vegas.
Okay. Why is the focus specifically male educators and male students?
Yeah, I get that question a lot. And as someone with two daughters and who was raised by a family of women, it is often sometimes a gut check for me. But when I look at the data, you know, nationally, less than 2% of teachers are Black or Latino males. In Clark County, for example, 63% students are Black and brown. That's holistically in terms of all genders. And then if you take that number and you add in only 2% of their teachers are Black and Latino males, that's a huge problem that we're trying to solve. And so it's less really a focus on, yes, there's a focus on gender, but really it's the problem of ensuring kids have educators, Black and Latino male educator that they can see that looks different than what they may see on television or may be look different than what they may see, you know, the negative stereotypes. And so, yeah, we're trying to solve that problem. And that's why we focus on Black and Latino male educators.
Okay. And do you know the data on what percentage of Black and Latino female teachers are in the educational system?
I don't, but what I do know is around 70% of teachers are female nationally.
Yeah. Okay. So when exactly did you start the Las Vegas chapter?
Yeah, in 2021, we came out and just spoke with the community. We're a national organization, but it's important to us for us to build with the community and not for the community. And so before we did anything, we met with specifically some community leaders, but mostly the Black and Latino male educators there and just listening. That was a big part of what we wanted to do first. And so in 2021, we just took some time, a couple of months, just listening to the needs and then co-building sort of what local cohort and chapter could look like for them. And so we launched in 2021 with our first cohort of guys.
And where are the other chapters across the country?
We have a national organization, so we support 120 guys nationally. I would say about 36 cities, about 16 states. So we have guys all across the country. And then we have specifically two chapters, one in Las Vegas and then one in Milwaukee that we're supporting currently. Yeah, and one of my home bases is in Brooklyn, New York City. And so we're talking with New York City about what a local community cohort could look like for them in the Northeast.
Nice. So what specific activities does the organization do?
Yeah, we focus on three particular pillars. One is we know that every elite performer, no matter what industry or what sector, you need a coach. And so all of our guys, even if they're teachers, all the way up to senior leaders, they have access to an executive coach that is certified by the International Coaching Federation, and they're specifically trained in our model of utilizing emotional intelligence. Because one of the things that we do, it's especially, you know, it's not just about teaching and the skill of teaching. It's really about how do you handle a lot of the pressures, both as a Black Latino male educator, but also just educator at large, Heather, because as a former teacher and former school principal, there's a lot that comes with the job where you're carrying a lot of the emotions on the building. And so one of the things that we focus on is emotional intelligence. We focus on kids with a lot of the social emotional learning. We think that emotional intelligence is social emotional work for adults, because just like kids need to be doing their emotional, social emotional work, adults in the building need to be doing the same. So executive coaching, we partner each one of our guys with a local Black or Latino male mentor that's in Las Vegas. It's important for us for them to see folks in their community that's been successful. So that's one part of it. So the one-on-one aspect. And then we also have the coaching and training. So we have the opportunity to bring our training that we know works across the country, specifically to these guys in Vegas. And so they have access to that. We meet monthly with our guys, both for training, but also for fellowship. So there's a Friday night social event, and then there's also the training aspect of it as well. And so those are sort of our two, three pillars that we focus on. There's other things, but those sort of like the high level ones.
Yeah, okay. So, what was your recent inaugural Roses from Concrete Award all about?
Yeah, you know, when I think of roses, you think of weddings and you think of all those things. So to take a concept like a rose and bring that to a space full of men is beautiful. You know, one of the things that we like to debunk is the myth of like the alpha male and toxic masculinity and those things. And so just to give you some background, our theme is really the rose that grew from concrete. It's built off Tupac's Rose from Concrete. And our award ceremony was honoring Kelvin Watson, who we like to say, or I like to say, is a rose that grew from concrete, both for what he's been able to do throughout his career, but also his personal story. And so for us to honor him was an honor for us, honestly. I mean, he was able to come talk to our, it's kind of like graduation for us. And yeah, it was a beautiful thing. We were able to have it at the East Las Vegas Community Center, which is also really cool for us to have it in the community, especially that's a, from what I understand, a heavy Latino population community. And so for us to have it there was also significant. So it was a beautiful, beautiful day.
Nice. So those who have heard him be interviewed by me will know that Kelvin Watson is the executive director of the Las Vegas Clark County Library District. What specifically is Kelvin doing in the community that attracted the attention of the National Fellowship for Black and Latino Male Educators?
What attracted me to Kelvin is because I've never heard of someone, especially librarians, the idea of bringing the library to the people. And I know for myself with kids, like, and I don't know about you, like, I used to go to the library a lot, especially with my kids, but now I don't go as much. But I wonder what it would look like if there was like a satellite place here. So his concept of the idea of just one of them of bringing the library to the people, and he talks about putting them in different venues where you wouldn't see a library normally. I know they just had a big event for books for barbershops, I believe. Even just the idea of putting a library in the barbershop, that's where the people are. And that's just such a, you know, revolutionary, you think of as like all these different things may come up for you. But to me, that's a revolutionary, transformative idea. And so him doing that is just one way I think that all of us can learn from, just small ways, simple solutions that can make a huge impact for our community. And for him to be a model for that for our guys about what change could look like, just from the power of idea, but also applying that and making it a reality is awesome.
Okay. What are some of the ways that members of the community could get involved in supporting the organization or helping with your mission?
Yeah, I think the first one is just supporting our guys, just in terms of, you know, our guys are moving through their careers. And so advice and or opportunities is always important. I think number two, we're always looking for mentors or for guys to be able to reach out to based on if they have questions within the community. And then three, we're always, you know, looking to be able to support our guys and build this out for the long term. And so through donations, because one of the things that we're trying to do is create a model for other cities nationally where we get kids interested in high school into the education profession, not just teaching, because there's a lot of opportunities in education. You can go into law, you can go to IT, you can go into marketing, social media. And so getting kids interested in the education sector in high school, getting them placed in universities like UNLV, who Keith Whitfield has come out and talked to our guys. Once they're placed in those programs, getting them now placed in jobs, real jobs that pay and give them a pathway to economic mobility. And then from there, you know, we sort of support them through the early years of thriving in their roles so that they can then move through the pathways of leadership.
All right. So, how can people find out more details about the National Fellowship for Black and Latino Male Educators and especially the Las Vegas chapter?
Yeah, just visit our website, nfblme.org, and there's a space in there where you can leave your information. And yeah, if you're also interested, we have plenty of events in Las Vegas and would love to see everyone out there.
All right. So once again, nfblme.org is the website to go to. Stands for National Fellowship Black and Latino Male Educators, nfblme.org. You can check out the events that are coming up. You can find out what they're doing, get involved with support, being a mentor, making a donation, all of that, nfblme.org. And we've been speaking today with Keith Brooks. He's the CEO and founder of the National Fellowship for Black and Latino Male Educators Las Vegas chapter. And Keith, I really appreciate you being here and bringing awareness to this issue that probably a lot of people don't even really think about, and letting us know some of the things you're doing to help the youth in our community and the educators in our community and make a positive impact. So I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Heather, thank you for bringing these issues that are often not spoken about. There's so many things in society, TikTok and the Kendrick Drake beef and all those things where it just takes too much of our attention. And so you refocusing us on what really matters, which is what happens in our day-to-day lives, is very important. So thank you also for what you do.
Teachers are diverse, skilled leaders, innovating to prepare students for our fast-changing world. Teaching shapes lives. Are you ready? Explore teaching at teach.org, supported by the U.S. Department of Education and 1 million teachers of color.
This is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. I'm Heather Vail, and I'm speaking with Abigail Ross Hopper, President and CEO of the Solar Energy Industries Association. The U.S. has hit a milestone for solar installations, and Nevada ranks 6th in the nation. Abigail, thank you so much for being here today.
It's a pleasure. Thanks, Heather.
Now, for those who aren't familiar, what is the Solar Energy Industries Association?
So we are the national trade association for the solar industry. So our members are companies, everything from publicly traded companies to, you know, a small contractor who is one or two employees. We represent all of those people and all of those companies. We represent the residential market. We represent the folks that build solar on Target, on Walmart, on Starbucks. And then we represent the folks that build the large solar projects in the desert that are also very popular in Nevada. And we represent manufacturers of solar products. And we do a lot of government relations. So I'm here in Washington. So we are active in the White House and in Congress and in the administration and all of the departments. We're active in the state, so in the State House and your regulatory commission in Nevada. And we try to give voice to all of these entrepreneurs and all of these homeowners just to make sure that they have an equal chance to participate in this energy transition and that it's available to every single person in our nation.
Awesome. Okay. So what is the solar milestone that the U.S. hit?
So we hit 5 million solar installations in the United States, 5 million homes that have gone solar. One of the interesting things is how quickly we did this. The first solar was installed in 1973, and it took us 40 years to get to 1 million installations in our country. And then it only took 8 years to get to 5 million.
Wow.
We think over the next 6 years, that's going to double to 10. And so you can see the pace of this transition is quick.
Yeah, absolutely. So in Nevada, we rank number 6. How do we compare to the rest of the country? And, you know, I'm kind of curious which states rank higher.
Yeah, it's a good question. Obviously, Nevada has a great solar resource. It's very sunny. I was just there 2 weeks ago. So the states that are ahead of you are California. California was an early adopter of solar. Texas. Texas is, they pride themselves as being the energy capital of the United States, and they are number 2 in solar. And Florida, the Sunshine State, is number 3.
Interesting. Okay. I did expect California and Florida to be on the list. Texas is a bit of a surprise for me, but okay.
Yeah. And North Carolina. North Carolina is up there as well, which we may find surprising.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Now, obviously, we all know that solar is popular here. I mean, all you have to do is drive around the neighborhoods and you can see it. And as you said, you know, it's very sunny here and solar adoption seems to be taking off at a record pace, as you just confirmed with your data. Now, how does all of this affect our economy?
You know, in the state of Nevada, we have already invested over $11 billion just in your state alone in solar installations. We've created over 7,500 jobs in your state. So it certainly is having an impact in your economy. There's been a couple of announcements of factories coming to the state of Nevada. So battery factories, solar panel manufacturers. So obviously that's going to have a pretty important impact on the Nevada economy.
Yeah, definitely. Now, for those who haven't made the switch yet, what do they need to know about going solar?
Yeah, I would encourage any homeowner that is thinking about going solar to approach it like they would any other purchase for their home. So talk to your neighbors and your friends and your family, get some recommendations, have a couple of contractors come to your house and look at your roof, do some comparison shopping, and understand your electricity bill. That might be the hardest of the pieces of advice, right? Lots of lines, lots of numbers on those bills, but understanding where you're going to save money. You're going to save money on the fuel costs because obviously sunshine is free, but understanding the amount of savings you will have is an important part of that. We have some really good information on our website, seia.org, that is specifically for homeowners, consumers thinking about going solar to help walk them through the process.
Awesome. Now, we talked about the past and the present, and you alluded to what's coming, but what do you see as the future of solar?
So one of the things I see as the future of solar, in addition to the rapid adoption, as you said, is the pairing of solar with batteries. We call it storage, but it's basically a battery. So if you're a homeowner in Nevada and you put both solar and storage, a battery, at your home, you're going to be able to stay online, stay energized, even if the rest of the grid goes down. So if you have a bad storm or you have a wildfire or something happens, your house will stay energized. And why is that important? Well, it might be important if you have a family member that is on a breathing machine, or if you have a family member that has medication that has to stay cold and, you know, you need your refrigerator to stay on. So we see more and more people and families and businesses choosing to pair those technologies together because it provides not just energy, right? But it also provides resilience to homeowners.
Yeah, and that's really a great idea to pair the solar system with the battery. But in the past, those batteries have been extremely expensive. Where are they sitting now in terms of affordability?
Yeah, it's a totally fair point. And just like lots of new technology, the more we deploy it, the faster the costs come down. And so we have seen the costs fall dramatically on the batteries. And there's also been some good policy at both the federal and the state level to help homeowners purchase storage products. So I always encourage homeowners to, when I say comparison shop amongst contractors, also comparison shop between solar and solar plus storage, right? So you can see the incremental cost of the storage and weigh that against the benefit of having that reliability at your home.
Yeah, some fantastic advice there. Okay, so where can listeners go if they want to find out more information about solar energy, the benefits of going solar, and the future of solar?
So I would encourage folks to take a look at our website, seia.org. That's seia.org. We have information there about the consumer guide to going solar, understanding the tax benefits, understanding the technology, the kinds of questions to ask to make sure that going solar is the right move for your family.
Nice. Okay. So once again, that website, seia.org, that stands for Solar Energy Industries Association, seia.org, and you can find plenty of information there about solar energy, including a consumer guide. You can find out about the tax benefits, the technology, the advancements, and the future of solar. And we've been speaking today with Abigail Ross Hopper. She's the president and CEO of the Solar Energy Industries Association. And Abigail, it's been fantastic talking to you and finding out, first of all, where Nevada stands in the nation, which is great news. We got some pretty high marks there. And also how consumers can take advantage of solar and what the benefits are of doing so. So I really appreciate your time here today. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Heather. Have a great day.
We see the urgent threat of climate change every day, but we often miss those hit hardest by it, women and girls. That's why CARE fights for a more just and sustainable world. You can help. Learn more at care.org/climate.
You're listening to the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. I'm Heather Vail, and I'm speaking with Todd Houghton, President and CEO of HomeWatch Caregivers. Many seniors would like to continue living at home as they age, but a lot of their adult children are concerned about safety and socialization. Todd, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me, Heather.
So what does the current state of senior care look like in the U.S.?
Yeah, so with about 73% of people over the age of 50 wanting to age at home, wherever their home might be, home care has really had to evolve, or senior care has really have to evolve to allow them to be connected and engaged more than just the hours that a caregiver's in the home. So we're really focused on the right tools and resources through technology to allow for that enhanced engagement.
Okay, is this a relatively new trend of wanting to stay at home?
You know, it's been increasing for the last, I'd say, 5 to 10 years. You know, people that are turning 65 or 70 have lived in their home for 10, 15, 30 years, and that's their surroundings. They're familiar with that. So being able to live there with dignity and safety really helps to reduce cognitive decline or other disease states that can progress if they move into a community-based living.
Got it. Now, the adults want to stay there because they feel safe in their own homes that they've known for years. So then why are adult children concerned about their parents' safety and also socialization opportunities?
Well, I think there's two pieces to that, right? So the adult child wants to, you know, help their parents fulfill their dreams by living at home. But most of the adult children live more than 60 miles away from their parents at this point. And so they need to have some sort of peace of mind, security that mom or dad aren't going to have a fall or have some other type of accident in the house. So that's where we, you know, really want to focus on that technology aspect to keep that aging person connected. The other piece is the silent epidemic. 1 in 3 people over the age of 65 suffer from loneliness and isolation. That is one of the biggest contributing factors to the escalation of cognitive decline. So focusing on keeping them engaged and connected in some way helps reduce the acceleration of cognitive decline.
Okay, so if the adult children don't live near their aging parents, what can those adult kids do to help their parents age in place?
Yeah, so that's where, you know, a company like ours, HomeWatch Caregivers, comes in. They can have a care professional come in the home and do, you know, a visit a week or multiple visits a week, depending on where in the process of aging that parent is, and have engagement, focus on their activities of daily living, as we like to call it, keep them engaged and active, and then also bring in behind the technology. So we've introduced our HomeWatch Connect, which is a technology solution that runs through the television that really focuses on that engagement and connection, keeping that parent connected with their family members, their adult children, their doctors, their nurses, their HomeWatch caregiver's office, providing that 24/7 peace of mind through a secure, closed environment. It really helps to give that peace of mind to the adult children as well as the aging parent.
Cool. So we talked about loneliness and isolation. How do those things affect physical and mental health?
Yeah, so statistics show, obviously, 1 in 3 seniors suffer from loneliness and isolation. When you're alone, the mind slows down, which contributes to accelerated cognitive decline. So dementia, Alzheimer's, things like that will really accelerate if they're feeling lonely or not engaged with people. So we're trying to focus on that and fight that. The other thing, too, that really, when somebody's alone, there's a higher chance for a fall risk or other type of accident in the home. And we know once that happens, if a senior experiences a fall, things start to typically decline quicker because of that. So we're trying to be focused on that, you know, make sure that we can help reduce the opportunity that they might go to the hospital from a fall, keeping eyes on them as much as possible to keep them safe and secure.
Okay. Now, of course, we all remember the old commercials for a product that I won't mention about a senior who falls and can't get up and can't find help. How does HomeWatch Connect fill the gap and make it so that even if the senior is alone and even if they are unable to reach loved ones in that moment, that this technology will help?
Yes. So there's a couple components to it. So the smart camera that operates through the TV, it really allows for that visual aspect of things. So if they're not feeling well, they can call their local office or they can call, you know, their adult child, and the eyes can be set on them to see what's going on and quickly assess what should be the next steps. Does 911 need to be called, or is it something that the HomeWatch Caregivers Office can go out and send out a caregiver or a nurse to help with, but it really enhances that connection. The challenge with what you're mentioning is that has to be actually worn to work. And if they're not wearing it and they fall, they're not going to be able to get the help they need. But if there's something going on, visual eyes can be laid on them through the camera and see what's going on and have a better understanding. We also have sensors that go along with it, and the sensors sit throughout the house, and that helps to detect movement, motion, sounds, things like that. So if there was, hopefully doesn't happen, but if there is a fall, that sensor would pick that up, and that can activate a video call or, you know, sending out 911, whatever might need to happen.
Okay. So, I mean, some people would think, well, you know, we could just use smartphones or a video connection like a Zoom or FaceTime, whatever, and connect that way. But what you're talking about goes far beyond that.
Correct. And, you know, absolutely somebody could use a smartphone or whatever it might be, but that's not really a secure environment. There's a lot larger likelihood that a senior could get scammed or phished through somebody if they're using that smartphone device, because it's not a secure closed environment. Our technology is a secure closed environment. The adult child determines who's part of the network, so they'll know who's interacting with mom and dad, keeping them secure and safe.
Awesome. So where can listeners go if they want to learn more, whether they're a senior or an adult child looking for options for their aging parents?
Absolutely. You can find us at homewatchcaregivers.com. Take a look there and you'll see all the information on our Total Care Solutions and our HomeWatch Connect offerings.
Okay. homewatchcaregivers.com is the website to go to. homewatchcaregivers.com. You can find out more about various care options for seniors, including in-home healthcare professionals and HomeWatch Connect, which is the technology that Todd's been talking about. homewatchcaregivers.com. And we've been speaking with Todd Houghton. He's the president and CEO of HomeWatch Caregivers. And Todd, it's been great talking to you and finding out more about the technology that's available, especially for seniors who want to continue living at home. There's no reason why they can't if they have the tools and resources for them to do that safely. So I really appreciate your time here today. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Heather. I appreciate it.
My early Alzheimer's diagnosis was hard to take,
but it gave my mom and me more time to plan together.
Talk to your family about seeing a doctor. Go to alz.org/time to talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
You're listening to the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. I'm Heather Vail, and I'm speaking with Tony Matoska, certified manual physical therapist and clinic manager for Athletico Physical Therapy. Chronic pain can affect every aspect of daily life, but there are some natural ways to manage it. Tony, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
So how common is chronic pain in adults these days?
It's becoming very common. Studies show about 84% of us are going to have some form of pain in our lives. And how we manage it from the start is really going to determine how our recovery goes. And roughly almost a third of those people who find themselves in pain at one point can find themselves in pain even a year later. So it's important to learn how we can manage these things from the get-go so we can avoid bigger problems later in life.
Yeah. So why is it getting more common?
Our society in general, we've become more passive. We're finding ourselves sitting for longer periods. We sit at work for long periods. We drive home and then we end up going home and not doing much activity there as well. So we're just not getting the movement and exercise that we often need. On top of that, there's personal and life stress that can add to these problems too. And as health problems go, they can all contribute to increased pain in our lives. And we're now seeing more adults rely on things like prescription medications to manage their pain, and then undergoing other procedures and some invasive surgeries as well that can be both costly and have long-term side effects. So when we manage these things, it really requires a multidimensional approach, and physical therapy is an excellent place for that to start.
Nice. Now, how is chronic pain typically diagnosed?
So it's typically diagnosed by timeline. Initial injuries in the acute phase, of which typically lasts from either a few days to up to 3 months. There's a subacute phase, which is a few months longer, and chronic pain is typically 6 months or longer that you've been dealing with an injury. It hasn't healed with just time and activity on your own, and then that's where other things like activity modification need to come into play.
Okay. Now, besides prescription painkillers, you mentioned physical therapy, but what are some of the other things we can do to manage the pain?
So there's a lot of things that you can do on your own, even without the guidance of a physical therapist, but one is activity modification, finding ways to stay active. finding activity that you enjoy doing that's not making your symptoms worse and that you can keep up with pretty consistently. General guidelines are about 150 minutes of activity a week. So if you can find activity that you can break apart throughout your week to stay active, that could be very helpful. Other things that aren't commonly thought of as often for pain management is sleep. Sleep is closely linked with pain, but is often an afterthought. Poor sleep habits have been shown to contribute to the development of chronic pain. So getting a consistent sleep and wake time isn't very important. Things that can help with that are like keeping your room very dark and very cool at night, minimizing caffeine in the afternoon, and even minimizing the use of their electronics about an hour to two before bed. Nutrition also plays a very vital role. General rule of thumb is avoid like excessive sugar, eat more fiber, help to help manage that systemic inflammation that we know contributes to chronic pain. And that can be done by increasing the amount of green leafy vegetables, nuts and seeds and berries and colorful fruits into your diet. And then the other big one is stress management. That is very vital in managing chronic pain. In fact, the number one predictor of chronic pain is depression. So this makes many individuals who are dealing with depression symptoms very susceptible to developing long-term problems. So managing stress in healthy ways can be very helpful, not just to improve pain, but improve sleep as well. Things like deep breathing, a combination of aerobic and resistance exercise, meditation, mindfulness are all really great tools to help manage these things.
Okay, awesome. Now, you said stop using electronics an hour or two before bed. And I know there's probably some people listening saying, wait a second, I fall asleep right after looking at my phone or when watching a movie. So why does watching electronics right before we go to bed affect our chronic pain situation?
It has a lot to do with the blue light. With what that blue light does to our central nervous system, it can actually ramp it up to an extent. So our bodies will have a harder time getting to that deeper sleep that we need to truly let ourselves rest, reset our nervous system, and prepare yourself for the next day. Sometimes with people who have trouble falling asleep and are dealing with either like borderline insomnia or just true insomnia, that blue light can really mess with people. So if they're having a hard time breaking that habit of watching TV, scrolling their phone or their device, there are a few things you can do to help. One is either dimming the brightness or putting it on black and white mode, which a lot of electronics have nowadays, or worst case, even looking into blue light blocking glasses that you can purchase for relatively inexpensive. Otherwise, it's just finding more consistent routines for bedtime that just help kind of ramp you down. Reading, meditation, prayer, bathing at night with the warm water can help reset yourself too. And just find things that can help ramp you down right before bedtime.
Okay. Now, you've given a lot of great tips about what people can do at home, changing their habits around exercise, getting better sleep, monitoring stress. But when they've done all that, how does someone decide whether it's time to go to physical therapy?
When pain is really stopping you doing what is most important to you, whether it's your gardening, if it's your regular exercise program, keeping up with your kids or grandkids, when it's really impacting your day-to-day life and your overall function, that's the perfect time for PT. The sooner you start, the better, just because the sooner you start, the sooner you'll see better results too. Working with the PT Athletico, they're going to get to know you. They're going to get to know your story and discuss what's most important to you so we can figure out how to help you at best. Treatment's going to start from day one with a very structured program specific to you as the patient. And the most important thing is not just the treatment in clinic, but what we do to teach you at home. Activity, exercise, sleep, stress management, all everything like that. And we take a very holistic approach to that treatment. You can get started with physical therapy in most states through direct access, which means you can start with physical therapy without needing a doctor's prescription. Some insurances, especially like federally funded based plans like Medicare and Medicaid, don't apply to that, but most major insurers will allow you to go right away. So ultimately, starting PT first can help you save on a lot of pain, a lot of frustration and stress, but it also can save you on a lot of costs from not having to take medications or go under other procedures, other doctor's appointments. So time and cost savings will follow with that.
So where can people go to find out more information about managing chronic pain?
The best way is to go to our website, www.athletico.com. We have lots of great health resources. Our clinicians write blogs that have a lot of evidence-based research behind it on every health topic you can think of, anything from just basic PT management, good exercise for specific activities, golf, walking, gardening, snow shoveling. But we also talk about pain. We talk about different treatments. So it's a great resource center there. And then if you're looking for a location near you, we have a location tab too to read more about our areas and then our clinicians in those areas too.
Awesome. So athletico.com is the website, A-T-H-L-E-T-I-C-O, athletico.com. They've got plenty of articles and information there. If you want to look into physical therapy locations, there aren't any in Nevada, but there are a bunch in Arizona, which are pretty close. And of course, the articles and the information that are there can be helpful whether or not you decide to go to physical therapy. But if you do, the resources are there. athletico.com. And we've been speaking today with Tony Matoska. He's a certified manual physical therapist and clinic manager for Athletico Physical Therapy. And Tony, you've given some fantastic information and some great tips right here in this interview. So I really appreciate you bringing this to our attention and some ways that people might not know that they can manage chronic pain at home. Some of the factors that they probably weren't aware affected the chronic pain in the first place. So it's been fantastic talking to you today. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Heather.
Over the years, you've brought opioids into your home. They helped when you were in pain, and you held on to them, just in case. But holding on to opioids puts your family at risk. Learn more at www.fda.gov/drug disposal.
I'm Heather Vail, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is Dr. Carissa Thal, a physician in State College, Pennsylvania, and Courtney Clark, an 18-year-old who's been suffering from chronic migraine disease. Thank you both so much for being here today.
Thank you for having us.
Dr. Thal, how common is chronic migraine disease in the U.S.?
So about 1 out of every 10 adolescents and 1 out of every 10 adults suffer from migraine. And 20% of that population ends up with chronic migraine.
And what specific challenges do adolescents have when they're dealing with migraines?
It's an excellent question. And I think the crux of it is that there is limited treatment options for adolescents to use to treat their migraine. They've got over-the-counter agents like ibuprofen and acetaminophen. And because they're so readily available, oftentimes I see adolescents overuse those medications, and it ends up causing a downstream problem that we refer to as rebound headache. Additionally, there are several limited options that are prescription drugs for adolescents to treat their migraine. However, they may or may not be effective, and even if they are treating the headache, they often leave the adolescent riddled with side effects. For example, they can make them very fatigued to the point where they have to leave school and go home and take a nap.
Okay. Now, Courtney, you've been dealing with migraines for several years now. How has that impacted your life?
Yeah, so I've been experiencing migraine attacks since I was 7 years old. So it's been 11 years of a lot of learning. Last year, for example, I lost 375 hours due to chronic migraine. And so I missed a lot of school. I missed, you know, sporting events. I had to quit soccer. All these things, all these little things kind of build up over time. So I'd say that right now my entire life revolves around chronic migraine and mitigating attacks and making sure that I'm able to function at my best.
Okay. Now, Dr. Thal mentioned some treatment options that teens and adolescents tend to try. You've obviously had plenty of time to experiment with what works and what doesn't work for you. So what sort of treatment options have you found that do work for you?
I'd say that one of the biggest things that's helped is the Nervio Run wearable. It's non-drug. And I can, you know, control the wearable with my phone, with an app on my phone, and it's really easy to integrate my treatment into daily life. So that ability to be sitting in class and, you know, feel the symptoms of an attack coming on, and then not have to take medication, but instead just put my Nervio on and then continue with whatever derivatives I was working on.
When you talk about feeling the symptoms of an attack coming on, what does that feel like?
It's a very unique experience, I think, for anybody who has experienced migraine attack. But I'd say that it starts off for me with excessive yawning, neck stiffness, drowsiness, sometimes irritation, sensitivity to light, sensitivity to sounds, sensitivity to smells and nausea, sometimes dizziness, lack of coordination, and some visual changes. And that's all usually before the pain starts.
Okay. Now, Dr. Thal, Courtney was talking about how some non-drug treatments have worked for her, specifically wearable technology. What are some of the non-drug treatments available and how does this technology work?
Right. So the Neurovio Ren wearable is a device that wraps around the upper arm. It sits below the shoulder, but above the elbow, and it transmits a gentle nerve stimulation, and it travels via upper arm to the brain. Once the signal reaches the brain, it harnesses the brain's own power to combat the migraine attack.
And Dr. Thal, do we know what causes migraines?
That's the million-dollar question. There are many, many triggers to migraine. Stress tends to be the number one universal trigger, but essentially the crux of it is that patients have a genetic predisposition to have a sensitivity in their nervous system.
Okay. So Courtney, now that you've found non-drug, non-disruptive treatment support that works for you, how is that going to affect your future as you move on past high school?
Yeah, it has definitely helped me take some of my focus off of, you know, my own symptoms for once. And I have more time. I have a greater capacity for other things, such as, you know, advocacy and raising awareness. I'm actually the president and founder of a group at my high school called Access, where we work on disability justice and generally raising awareness of all sorts of chronic illnesses and disabilities for adolescents and, you know, kids in high school who are managing all sorts of things.
Wow, that's fantastic. Okay, so Dr. Thal, where can listeners go if they want to find out more information about migraines, new treatment options, specifically for adolescents, although I'm assuming they work for adults as well?
Sure. I would encourage both patients and healthcare providers to go to nerivio.com, N-E-R-I-V-I-O. And from there, they can actually click Get Nerivio and access downloadable prescription forms that will enable them to get the device.
Awesome. So nerivio.com is the website to go to, N-E-R-I-V-I-O, nerivio.com. You can find out more about the new technology, the wearable devices that can be used to treat migraines without drugs, without disruption. And it's obviously made a big impact in Courtney's life. She's been suffering with chronic migraines for a long time, and these new wearable devices have really helped her. So nerivio.com is where to find out more. And we've been speaking today with Dr. Carissa Thal and also Courtney Clark, who's an 18-year-old who's been suffering from chronic migraine disease for many years. So I want to thank you both for being here. Courtney, for sharing your story and your experiences, and Dr. Thal for sharing new treatment options with the listeners. So I appreciate you both. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
Charlie did not die from an overdose. Charlie was poisoned.
No other family should go through this. It's just horrific.
Go to safe.pharmacy. Use the free tool. Learn if the online pharmacy you're using is safe.
I'm Heather Vail, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is Dr. Charles Fay, child psychologist, president of the Love and Logic Institute, public speaker, and co-author of the new book, Raising Mentally Strong Kids. Dr. Fay, thank you so much for being here today.
Well, thank you.
So what inspired this book, Raising Mentally Strong Kids?
Well, Dr. Daniel Amen and I, we started noticing the data on the state of kids. CDC study recently, 57% of girls report being persistently sad, very depressed, and tragically, 24% admit considering suicide. So many other data like that, also showing boys in big trouble. We thought we got to get together and do something for parents, for the world.
Why do you think that is, that so many kids are sad or even depressed?
Well, there's a lot of factors. I'd like to pick on two right now. The first, and I bet the listeners have guessed it already, technology. Big issue. Technology has actually rewired the brain. And we're seeing so many kids struggling with not being able to set limits with themselves over it. And that's not surprising. We know from the research on the brain, frontal cortex isn't totally developed. As a result, they have trouble setting those limits for themselves. We have to do that for them. We have to step up to the plate and give them those strong boundaries. And parents, listen to me here. Do this. You will not regret it. No devices in the kids' bedroom. That's a good place to start, right? You're not going to get an award from your kids for doing that, but you're going to have a lot happier, healthier kids. So technology is a big one. The second one is we have so many parents, understandably, in our society that are fearful of allowing their kids to struggle with typical problems that come up. They have a hard teacher, or they're struggling with a friend, or they don't understand an assignment, or they have a tough coach. Those are good problems to have, because coming close here, friends, when we have problems and we are allowed to face them and guided to overcome them, guess what? We have hope. We can see that we're capable. So those are two things that are problems, but two opportunities for us parents.
Interesting. Okay. So what are the basic principles of your love and logic approach towards raising kids?
Well, there are many techniques, but we keep it very simple. Number one, parents take really good care of themselves. And we've been teaching this for over 50 years. That's how long Love and Logic has been around. But it's a core principle, because when we take good care of ourselves, as our book teaches, that rubs off on the kids. We start with ourselves, right? That's something that we can control. The second core principle or rule for us of Love and Logic is that when a kid has a problem or they cause a problem, we hand that problem back to them. In other words, we deliver empathy. We're kind, of course. Nothing works without love. Nothing works without love. We're kind, but at the same time, we're asking this question, son, daughter, what do you think you're going to do? And we guide them through that process. And we could start very young with kids. But when kids succeed with solving a problem, they feel great about themselves. That's one of the best antidotes for depression and anxiety.
Okay. So one of the common themes here seems to be, if we allow our kids to struggle or make mistakes and then figure out what should happen, do we go so far as to let them deal with the consequences of their actions?
You bet. We have to do it. Because if we shield kids from consequences, how are they ever going to learn how to make good decisions in the real world? And, you know, we talk a lot in our country right now about inflation. Well, mistakes suffer from it too. The price tag of mistakes goes up every single day for our kids. So sadly, helicopter parents, I think most people are familiar with that. They unnecessarily rescue their kids from the consequences of their poor decisions. See, what happens is when the kids make little mistakes, those parents do not allow those to be teaching experience for their kids. And so they up the odds that their kids will go out and make huge mistakes later on, right? Better that they make the small mistakes, face those consequences now, than those bigger ones later on.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. So how do neuroscience and psychology figure into these strategies for successful parenting that you're talking about?
Well, Dr. Daniel Amen, my friend and the co-author, genius neuroscientist, and he's done such a great job of studying the brain and shouting out to people, hey, kids need to learn how to take good care of their brains, because that's the control tower right there. If that's not healthy, nothing else is going to be healthy. But see, when we parent well, that's the programming of the brain. That's the mind part, right? And when we program well, in other words, when we operate well around our kids, do healthy parenting strategies, that input actually helps the brain grow. Think about it. Brain needs struggle. The brain needs boundaries. The brain needs many inputs in order to grow. And when we are challenging kids in loving ways, let's slow down a bit. Challenging kids in loving ways by setting limits, by saying no, by doing a lot of the things that just great parents have always done, that actually causes brain development. The brain will not grow unless it has to.
Interesting. So if we have a kid who is not living up to their full potential, they're underachieving, Is it as simple as giving them more challenges, more things to work through, and that can help turn it around?
Oh, well, that's part of the puzzle. We have a whole chapter on underachievement, and there's 9 things we talk about. I want to give you 3 right now. I want to give parents 3 things they can do. And it's going to take time, but you will never regret it. Parents, you'll never regret doing this. First is you say to yourself, the kid has to own the learning. Okay, when they're struggling in school, I need to go to them and not be angry, not try to dictate solutions, but say to them, gosh, this must be really hard for you. I'm going to love you regardless of how well you do, but what do you think you're going to do? What do you think you're going to do? Now, the kid's probably not going to know. But what you've said to the kid essentially is, I believe in you, and this is your challenge to face, and you've stayed out of a power struggle. That's number one. Number two, put most of your energy into character. And one of the best ways to teach character, chores. Kids need to do chores in the home. They need to be part of the home team. So you're teaching character, you're teaching kindness, you're teaching all of those basic old-fashioned character values which contribute to brain growth. Remember this, character is more important than academic achievement. I mean, we already have enough really well-educated sociopaths in America. We don't need any more. What we need is really, you know, we need really good people. You'll never regret doing that with your kids. And then the third thing is we find out what they're really good at, and we focus most of our energy on that. See, we don't try to put every kid into the same box occupationally or educationally. We find out what they're really good at, and we say to them, find out a way that you can turn this into a career and you're going to be successful. Those 3 things, you know, they're not going to guarantee that the kid's always an A student, but they're going to guarantee or dramatically up the odds that you'll have absolutely no regrets as a parent.
Yeah. Okay. Now, if a child tends to be emotional and has a hard time dealing with being given challenges or being asked to do things, being asked to own up to their actions, how do we deal with that emotional sensitivity?
Well, the first thing we remember is the fewer words we use, the better. So many times we overtalk. We just use too many words instead of basically providing empathy to the kid, right? Mm-hmm. And showing that we care and going into problem solving mode and then getting some help, right? There are some kids that struggle emotionally and it goes beyond our resources as a parent, right? You should never be ashamed of that. In the book, we talk a lot about different challenges with the brain, ADHD, depression, anxiety, possibly some toxins that are present in the environment, perhaps some dietary issues. We talk a lot about that, but that can be complex and we all need help. So don't hesitate to get some help when you feel overwhelmed. But while you're working with the kid, err on the side of very few words, not jumping into fix-it mode. Basically communicating to the kid, I love you. We're going to work on this together.
Okay, awesome. So it sounds like there's a lot of simple yet very effective strategies that you talk about in the book. So if listeners want more information on this topic or even to get a copy of your book, Raising Mentally Strong Kids, where would they go?
Well, you can find the book anywhere where books are sold. You can learn about love and logic by going to loveandlogic.com. You can learn about Daniel Amen. Google his name, Daniel Amen, Dr. Daniel Amen. Go to danielamen.com or amenclinics.com. Amazing man. Great resources he provides.
Awesome. So once again, loveandlogic.com is the website for the Love and Logic Institute, loveandlogic.com. And then if you want to find out more about Dr. Daniel Amen, who's the co-author with Dr. Charles Fay on this book, Raising Mentally Strong Kids, you can go to danielamen.com or just Google Dr. Daniel Amen. And then, of course, if you want to get a copy of the book that we've been talking about today, Raising Mentally Strong Kids, it's by Dr. Daniel Amen and Dr. Charles Fay. And you can find that on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or wherever you like to get your books. Once again, that book is called Raising Mentally Strong Kids. And we've been speaking today with co-author Dr. Charles Fay, who's a child psychologist and public speaker. And Dr. Fay, I want to thank you so much for sharing this information with us, sharing some strategies, some tips, and giving parents a place to start and a place to explore these new strategies for raising mentally strong kids. So thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you so much. Parents, you could do this.
At Child Fund, hope means helping millions of children worldwide grow up healthy, educated, skilled, and safe. And that means safe at home, at school, and online. Child Fund, because we need each other.
Learn more at childfund.org.
I'm Heather Vail with the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show, and this is your community events calendar for nonprofit initiatives and charity events around the Valley. Monday's Dark with Mark Chinook is a bi-monthly musical fundraising party at The Space, with each event raising $10,000 for a specific charity in 90 minutes. Upcoming shows include this Monday, July 1st at 8 p.m. benefiting the Love Yourself Foundation, and Monday, July 15th at 8 p.m. benefiting the Little Miss Hannah Foundation. Get tickets or find out more details at mondaysdark.com. That's mondaysdark.com. The 5th annual Battle for Vegas charity softball game between the Vegas Golden Knights and the Las Vegas Raiders is happening on Saturday, July 13th, with gates at 6 p.m. and first pitch at 8 p.m., plus post-game fireworks at 9:30 at Las Vegas Ballpark. Find out the details or get your tickets at battleforvegas.com. That's battleforvegas.com. The Las Vegas Clark County Library District is holding their annual Free Summer Challenge Reading and Activities Program through July 31st. Find out more or get started at thelibrarydistrict.org/summerchallenge. That's thelibrarydistrict.org/summerchallenge. And the Las Vegas Rescue Mission's holding their annual Bottled Water Drive through August 31st. You can drop off bottled water donations at the Las Vegas Rescue Mission security gate 24/7. Find out more at vegasrescue.org. That's vegasrescue.org.